Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale. Coming up next on the Wet Fly Swing podcast.
And we get out of the truck and they're looking around. They're like, are there bears here? And I was looking at them and I was like, you are standing in bear crap right now. Like literally the biggest pile of black bear crap I ever saw. He's standing in it and I was like, yeah. And you know, you just, if a bear comes out on a lake, that's cool. Like you give them space. You don't go try to get your, don't go for a selfie. You know, you will always outrow a bear. They can't swim that fast.
That was Curtis Royer taking us into bear country and the Northern Lights Lodge. Plus a Phil Roy bonus appearance today on The Swing.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how you doing today? Thanks for stopping by the show. We just launched another big trip giveaway. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/giveaway right now for your chance to win a trip to the Northern Lights Lodge and a huge gear pack from our sponsors. This will be open for about a week, so check it out right now. You can also take a look in the show notes. Today's episode is sponsored by Tressel, who you know from their game-changing telescopic fly rod roof rack systems. But did you also know that Tressel just released the only universal bike rack system designed exclusively for the angler and outdoorsman? You can check out this new universal rack system at wetflyswing.com/Tressel right now to see their full line of gear-carrying products and the Artist Series apparel. That's Tressel, T-R-X-S-T-L-E. Tressel, live your pursuit. Today's episode is presented by Jackson Hole Fly Company, a new kind of online fly shop. They design and manufacture their own high-quality fly rods, reels, gear, and over 1,000 fly patterns. You can get 25% off your first order right now. Head over to jhflyco.com/swing to get started right now. That's jhflyco.com/swing. You support this podcast by clicking through that link to Jackson. Curtis Royer and Phil Roy are on the show today to take us into the Northern Lights Lodge. We discover and find out what the Northern Lights has that many others don't, including big bull trout, lots of great remote lakes, and a vast wilderness area with so much wildlife that you might as well be in Alaska. Plenty of good stories along the way Curtis is going to share with us today as well. All right, let's dig into it and find out what type of experience we are giving away this week in the big trip giveaway. Here we go, Curtis Royer and Phil Roy. How you guys doing?
Doing good, Dave. How about yourself?
Good, good. Curtis, are you out there?
Yeah, I'm having the time of my life.
Good to have you on here, Curtis and Phil. This is it's kind of been good about the way I always love these things. You kind of have, Phil, you probably see this too with the podcast, right? You got the littoral zone going now. You kind of start to talk to somebody and you have that nice little groove like right away. I feel like Curtis, we had that from the beginning because you have that same sarcastic. Is that a Canadian thing? Just tell me, because you guys have the same thing going on. I love it, by the way, but what's the deal with it?
I think it's a smart ass thing.
Yeah. Smart ass, Canadian, sarcastic. They're all very similar. Yeah,
exactly. Good. Well, we got some good stuff. We got Phil, like I said, he has his own podcast now, Littoral Zone. Curtis is up at Northern Lights Lodge. We're going to dig into what you have going there. But start us off first. Take us back into how you first got into fly fishing, and then we'll take it into how you came into the Northern Lights Lodge.
So yeah, I grew up fishing with my dad in Southern Alberta to start. And then when I was a kid, we moved over to Africa. So I fished in Africa and then we came back to Canada, and I kind of wasn't fishing much for pretty much till I graduated high school. And then dad asked me to go fishing one day, and I just did it because that's what you do with your dad when he asks you to go fishing. So, and it really stuck with me that time. So I guess if you got listeners that take the kids fishing and they don't seem interested, like you never know when it's going to click. And for me, it clicked right after high school. And so anyway, it kind of started out fishing gear, and I was fishing a lake that Phil would know called Bull's Head, and really good trophy still water. And it was like 15 minutes away from my house. And I'd go out there and throw my, I don't know what I had, Rapalas and things like that. And I'd catch fish, but I'd always see these bloody fly fishermen all around me catching way more fish. So it just kind of metastasized into buying a fly rod. And then I bought a drift boat, and then I bought a jet boat, and then started to fish way too much to the point where I was like, I might as well just start guiding. And so that's how my wife and I ended up in Northern Lights. Was in Canada, our seasons are pretty short, so I wanted to go somewhere where we could hop in and kind of have a full season right from the get-go. And it worked out really well, and it's been a lot of fun. So Skeet and Sharon and the whole family up there, they're just amazing people. And the fishery is so diverse that you get to do a little bit of everything, and it's always interesting. There's always great people around, and yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it is. And we had Skeet on in episode 397. I'll put a link out in the show notes to that one. That was pretty awesome because Skeet, he's a character, he's got a, he tells a good story, and he's got a good story. I mean, right? He told the story on that podcast how he almost died while he was saving some guy from, some guy that was out there right around your area. But Northern Lights Lodge is such a cool area. You guys have bull trout. You've got, you're up north. You've got all the bears. You're at the head of the Skeena, right? This is literally the start of the Skeena Basin.
No, so it's the Quesnel.
Oh, the Quesnel.
So the Quesnel Lake, and then it's all the tributaries that dump into Quesnel Lake, and then outflow of Quesnel Lake and tributaries that come in below. So it's a big area. Like we've got countless rivers and even more lakes, all within, an hour around us. And so there's always something fishing, and it keeps it exciting because you go out on the river one day and it might be a little slow. You got somewhere to go try the next day. And there's no shortage. So we're mainly fishing rainbow trout, bull trout, and then we do have a little bit of lake trout fishing as well. And it's a lot of fun.
All right, well, we'll circle back around. I want to hear a little bit more of the basin stuff on the Quesnel Lake and all that. But Phil, we're going to talk here because you've been in the show circuit, so you've probably been talking to a lot of people and presenting on what it's like to get to a new lake. But that's what I was hoping. We're going to have you on. We're going to do another solo episode with you, just digging into that. But maybe talk about that a little bit. If you're coming up to, a new lake, Northern Lights, if you're going up to the lodge or something like that, what's your first step? What do what would you be asking Curtis or the folks up there?
Yeah, and that's important because even though, you may feel you have some still water experience and some confidence going on a lake or a river or wherever you're going, you just can't beat local knowledge. So resources such as Curtis are invaluable because they know the little nuances, the little sort of habits and features and characteristics of each lake that are a huge help because you obviously want to maximize your time when you're on the water and be as successful as you possibly can. So, reaching out to a lodge such as Northern Lights Lodge and seeing what's going on, checking their website, because I know looking at the Northern Lights Lodge site, for example, it has some very good information, some embedded videos in there. So you can get a measure of what's going on, what equipment you need to bring for the type of year, what hatches you may expect to run into, all of that stuff. And of course, you can also do a little bit of research at home too, sitting on Google Earth if you know the lakes or stuff. But I think, Curtis, you've got lots of lakes in your stable that you access at any given time of the year, depending on what you're trying to accomplish, right?
Yeah, so our program starts in May. Actually, this year it'll be the Stillwater School that we're going to do, and we start off in May fishing chronomids, and as the waters warm up and things kind of progress, we get into the damsels and the caddis hatches, the mayfly hatches, and then by the end of June, we're mostly transitioned away from still waters for July and August. The odd time we might go hit one, we do have a couple of lake trout lakes that fish really well in the middle of the summer. But for the most part, July and August are our river dry fly season. And then come September, we have a really strong run of sockeye salmon. And we'll go out and we'll fish egg patterns behind the sockeye for rainbow trout and bull trout from September into mid-October.
That's a fun fishery. I've done that.
And it changes. Like you know, it's so fun because you start in May and it's like, even the lake fishing, you know, it goes from the transition from May to June, super fun. So it's almost like you get a resurgence of enthusiasm because you're visiting these lakes and you're watching, you know, these hatches change progressively. And then right at the tail end of that, it's like, okay, now we're going to go do the exact same thing on the rivers. And our river fishing, well, our June, July, and August, it's almost all dry fly, like skeet and the lodge historically, it's a dry fly fishery, you know, June, July, and August, which is really special and not something I even expected when I went up there coming from Alberta and rivers like the Bow. So it's really fun. And then you get the salmon and it's like everything you thought you knew about trout changes, and your indicator fishing with eggs and streamers, and it's fun.
Nice.
Yeah, there's some huge, not only bull trout, but you've got lakers that'll come in and play, and big Quesnel Lake rainbows too, right, Curtis?
Yeah, so in 2020, Fisheries was actually out on one of the rivers that we guide, and they came over and snagged one of our, well, we gave them one of the bull trout our client had just caught, and they weighed, it was 17 pounds.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So I don't actually know what the total length was, but it was massive, and that wasn't the biggest one we caught that year. But you know, we don't mess around with them in that way to, you know, try to get weight. We don't have the right equipment to weigh a bull trout that big. But it's cool. Like they're like dinosaurs, those fish.
I remember fishing Quesnel Lake, and we would catch a bull trout. We typically with the fly gear because Quesnel's such a big, deep lake. But if you work the creek mouths coming in, there's always somebody hanging out there. And we had caught a bull trout that was pretty, you could tell it was long and lean. And we all envisioned that, you know, 3 or 4 months from now when the sockeye are in and the rivers are full of eggs and flesh, that thing's weight would almost double with the sheer volume of protein it's going to get.
The bioavailability in our fishery, because you know, the fish really don't go without food for very long because you have your typical, you know, Western River hatches of all your invertebrates. But then the salmon come. And so the trout, like last year, we had a record sockeye run. The trout literally had pot bellies, which I didn't know was even possible, but they all looked like little Homer Simpsons. And nice. And you'd put them in the net and they'd be puking eggs everywhere. And there were so many eggs in the river, you could watch them rolling down. It was unreal how well fed these trout were. And then, you know, as our season ends because of the weather, essentially, you know, the coho come in and they kind of get another chance at all these eggs, and then the fry start to hatch. So really, like probably mid-December to mid-January is their leanest month before the fry hatch, and then they have food again.
Yeah, because even in the lake, main lake, those sockeye spend close to a year in there and then smolt out the following spring. So those fish have got all summer to chase. I've seen them chase bait balls like you're on the ocean of sockeye smolts. It's pretty impressive.
Yep. It happens right in front of the lodge. You'll just be out there after a day of fishing, sitting on the deck of the lodge, and you'll see, you know, it's like the water just starts boiling in a 10-foot circumference area off the dock. And it's the salmon are so good for the fishery, and it was really good to see the numbers we saw last year. It's going to, you know, bolster those runs for years to come.
Right.
Geez, Dave, we may never be able to get you on a small lake being a wet fly swing kind of guy. You're going to like,
oh man, this is going to be, yeah. Well, that was the first thing that hit me on this. And that skeet episode, we talked about it. The fact that you got bull trout, you got the stream fishing, which is amazing. But then you also have the lakes, right? I mean, that's the thing. So, and that's what we're going to be digging into today a little bit. So, Curtis, paint the picture on the lodge a little bit. Give us the perspective. Let's talk about this trip. So people are going to be coming in here, and we're talking, maybe let's talk about timing and then also paint the picture of what they're going to expect at the lodge.
Yeah, so we start our stillwater season. We kind of shoot for mid-May, which gives us time for the lakes to be iced off, for the snow to be off the roads to the lakes, which you'd be surprised. Can be a little western getting into some of them. So it, you know, we usually have good access by mid-May, and the lakes have iced off and usually turned over by then. So you're at that prime time for, you know, the temperatures start to gradually rise, and you get more and more hatches, starting with chironomids and then calabatus, caddis, damsels, dragons, like you name it, it's around. And then mm-hmm. of course there's scud in most of those lakes all year round too. So they and then we fish. Our program, like we're in the Caribou, and we're kind of on the, I guess we're in the heart of the mountains of the Caribou, but we're on the edge of kind of lake country. So where we're going is usually fished mostly by locals because there's no cell phone coverage. We make a point to try to go to lakes where if you like your truck, you won't go there. You know, I've already gone through one truck just rock crawling my way into lakes that, you know, because we want to take people out to experience wilderness and fish that don't get a lot of pressure. And in some cases, there's lakes that we guide where I've never seen another fisherman except like bears and eagles. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, our stocked lakes, they're stocked. So you'll see the odd local now and then. But even then, we pick the ones that they're almost thinking about not stocking anymore because the access is so bad. And mm-hmm. and it keeps it special for our guests because they get to fish wild fish. So, which usually means plenty of, you know, I've had 60 fish days out on the lakes with a group of people. And then you also get to fish trophy stillwater, you know, rainbows that last year, our biggest one taped was 27 inches and it was on a dry fly. So, it's something that's not conventional everywhere. Like when I came from,
that was on the dry fly. That was on the dry fly on the lake.
Yeah. I was on a Chernobyl. So coming from Alberta, when Skeed hired me, he told me because I would fish lakes in Alberta, I was kind of a river snob, but I would go to the lakes when the rivers were blown out in the spring because I wanted to fish, you know, kind of the same reason why I'd go ice fishing right now out of necessity. And so I'd go to these trophy lakes in Alberta and I would hang my balance leech and, you know, I'd catch some fish and it was okay, but it never was like, as soon as the rivers were clear, I was gone. I wasn't hanging around. And so when I got out to Northern Lights and Skeed told me I was going to be guiding lakes, I was like, Skeed, I'm not a stillwater guy. Like I'm a river fisherman. And he's like, oh no, all you do, you go to the lake, you take a tri-wing sedge, a tom thumb, and that's all you got to do. And I looked at it, I was like, yeah, okay. I don't think that's true. So anyway, we go out to a lake because he's going to show me where it is before I got to guide it. And so we get out there, and sure enough, he's got his tri-wing sedge on. And I didn't believe him, so I put on a balanced leech, and I was trolling my leech around and stripping a streamer. You're allowed to fish two rods. And he outfished me like 20 fish to 5. And I started to get it that, you know, there's something special about this area that I never expected. And now, like, honestly, stillwater season is probably my favorite time of the year at the lodge. Just because when you get a 20, like, it's not uncommon to catch fish over 20 inches on dry flies. And I see my backing way more, and clients see their backing way more fishing the still than they do fishing the rivers. Like we did a TV show with Brendan Morrison in mm-hmm. 2021. And I told him when we got to this lake, I was like, Brendan, you're going to see your backing. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. I fished a lot of lakes, Curtis. And anyway, his first fish, like if you ever see the episode, he gets it and this thing just peels and peels, and he just starts laughing because there's nothing you can do about it. It's hard to explain until you do it. And then once you do it, you can't stop doing it. Bill knows. He's yes. seen his before. But
nice.
It's different. And it's not something you expect from Stillwater because so many of us love river fishing. But when you can get a 20-plus inch rainbow smashing a dry fly, you can't beat that.
No, that's pretty rare. You know, most of the lakes I fish across North America are typically your best chances are subsurface presentations because trout feel safe eating just above the bottom. That's where all the food is. So what Curtis has got up there is pretty special. And we're not talking tiny caddis either. These are big travelers that you're fishing eights and tens, sixes.
No, like I only fish home.
Yeah, right.
Like heavy turnables and like one of our guides who just retired, Gordy, I was out there with him one day and he was fishing an egg laying stimulator, like a big golden stone, kind of not something you would ever throw. Like if you threw that on a lake in Alberta, you might get lucky and catch a fish, like just completely randomly. He had over 20 fish. He quit fishing because his arm hurt. And he was in the middle of the lake where it made no sense for him to be doing what he was doing. And it's just when it's on. And there's something about this particular strain of rainbow that they have the aggression to eat on the surface. And we have multiple strains. We have the horseflies, the blackwaters, and the panasque. And you'll catch them all on dries, which is kind of neat. But I think it's just the quality of the fishery.
Yeah, you have a video, embedded video on your site, Curtis, that shows it looks like he's trolling a gurgler or some kind of dry fly.
It was a golden chubby Chernobyl, and that was actually in September.
Yeah, so by that time, those fish are so used to having the odd bite to eat on the surface, if they see something going over the heads, because it's a drone shot, and you're looking down at the angler in the tube pulling that fly behind, and this rainbow comes at it three or four times before finally getting it sorted out and getting it stuck properly in its mouth.
The craziest thing about that shot, and I don't get to tell this story, like Sims actually shared that, and the guy who took the video is Dry Fly International, but we got that the first take, which was, and I kind of want to go out and just do that all day and see what I could actually get, but that was an exceptional fish too. Like it was, everything came together perfectly. And he had his rod in the rod holder. And I told Gilly, I was like, Gilly, just row as fast as you can along the edge of this weed bed. And he looked at me like, that sounds like, you know, he gave me a look. Because that's not typical Stillwater fishing advice you're going to get. And then I said, don't quit rowing. Like when the fish hits, until your reel is spooling, you don't quit rowing. Because he's going to hit it multiple times. Like I think they try to drown it. And then... So when you know he's hooked because your reel is spooling, that's when you drop your oars and you start flippering as hard as you can and grab that rod. You got to keep them tight. And he did it perfectly, and it was super cool that they got that shot.
Wow. Wow, I love that. Drowning the big dry fly. Is that, Phil, have you seen that before, heard of that?
Yeah, well, especially with those big caddis, one of the things you'll often see sometimes, those bugs are so big, and it's almost like the fish say, you know what, I'm tired of chasing these things across the water. I'm going to come up, and they'll swamp them, which as an angler is really crazy because it looks like a rise to your fly, but they drown the fly, and then they'll circle back around and just kind of take it in, you know, a much more less aggressive tone. But the first time it happens, you usually set, and your fly goes whizzing by your ear, and then somebody like Curtis will say, just stay calm. That fish tried to swamp it. So you got to watch what's going on, but it's pretty exciting because I've had situations in those caddis emergencies where you've got your fly and two naturals sitting beside it, and the fish comes back and leisurely goes 1, 2, 3 and eats them. And you're just kind of shaking, knowing your turn's coming, but you don't know whether you're first, third, or second. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. It's when it's on, it's predictable. Like I've been out on one of the lakes where you can see them coming from 100 yards away. Cause they just cruise the edge and they're picking off these sedge. So all you do is you find a sedge and you throw your Chernobyl beside it. And for some reason they'll take the Chernobyl over the actual sedge. I don't know why, but it's
bigger like piece of bigger of piece, of, bigger piece of pie.
Yeah. And so I made a little video. I had one GoPro battery. And I didn't move the whole time for like an hour. And it was just boom, boom, boom. It was unreal. And I mean, it happens every year, and it's so fun. It doesn't happen every day, but when those caddis start to go and those trouts, and they'll do it even in September when the boatmen start going, same thing. But then it's a little, you can't really predict where those are going to be because they land everywhere. So it's just you see a rise and you have 5 seconds to smash something on it and start stripping.
Wow, this sounds pretty crazy. Is this, Phil, when you again taking it back to, heading up to this lake when you're doing your take it to the school? So we're going to be doing this school. You're going to be basically teaching people. They might be brand new to this, still water completely, or have some experience. How do you start that off? Are we going to be covering chironomids, dries, like everything?
Yeah, we're going to work through again. I'll work in conjunction with Curtis to make sure what I'm talking about is appropriate for the season. But what Curtis is talking about, it probably will be more subsurface focused with the chironomids. But once that hatch gets going, trout, there's over 2,500 species of chironomids in Western North America alone. Their numbers in lakes outnumber all other aquatic insects combined. So these fish just eat them all season long. They'll eat them even when they're not hatching because they just know that they're food. It's kind of like, you being at a party and seeing a bowl of jelly beans or potato chips or something. You just know that's food and you'll eat one even though you may be coming over for a steak dinner. So they're always going to eat them. We're going to go over obviously the time of the year and how the lake's set up, what to expect, where the fish are and why, what equipment you should be using, leader setups, flies, basically everything we can do to make sure you have the student has the most successful time on the water. We want them to catch fish and lots of them, right? Because frankly, as Curtis can attest, it makes our job a lot easier, right? People are just off, in their pontoon boats fishing and enjoying the experience because what Curtis has got up there is pretty spectacular. It's very remote. The lakes are well removed from civilization, which is nice, and it's just you and the fish, and then you get to watch Mother Nature put a constant slideshow of cool things on all the time. Something's going by.
Drifthook has pre-packed fly assortments for every stage of your fly fishing journey. Their professionally curated fly fishing kits are crafted so you can catch more on your next outing. Each kit is organized by species and includes instructional videos and easy-to-follow guides. I've got the Nymph Box right here in my pack, and I've been loving this. They've got everything from the tiny zebra midges with a little flash, or all the way up to their large go-to guide flies. This box has you covered for all conditions. And were you thinking Euro nymphs? They got that covered as well. Beautiful Euro nymph flies, all the key flies you need to get going, whether you're a brand new to it or a veteran, Drifthook has the flies for you. Along with their nymph boxes, they have dry flies, streamers, and all the education to go along with all these as well. These are fly shop quality flies, hand-tied and inspected before being carefully packed neatly into these boxes. And Matt personally packs and prepares these boxes like he was tucking the kids in for bed at night, cozy, comfortable, and just the right amount of love. Whether you're an experienced angler who needs to stock up on some flies or get a great gift for the family, Drifthook has you covered. Check them out right now. That's Drifthook, wetflyswing.com/drifthook, and use swing at checkout to get 15% off your next order. You support this podcast and small business by checking out Drifthook right now. Let's talk bigger picture just for a second. We'll come back to the fishing. So, Curtis, where are people, if they're flying in from, the States or wherever, where are they flying into?
Yeah, so people get a flight to Vancouver, and usually, like with travel these days, you want to give yourself a good amount of time in Vancouver. And there's a connecting flight to Williams Lake. And I think it's Pacific Coastal now. But there'll be one or two flights a day to Williams Lake. So you want to give yourself ample time for the connector. A lot of guys will spend a night in Vancouver and then leave in the morning, whatever. And then we pick you up at the Williams Lake Airport, and it's about an hour and 15 minutes out to the lodge. And from there, you get situated in your room. We've got the main lodge has 8 rooms around it. And then we have a house right down on the lake that has 4 bedrooms. So if there's like a group of guys that know each other and they want their own space, We've got that. We've got cabins for couples. If a couple wants to come, they can have their own space away from the guys at the lodge if they want it. And we have a lot of accommodation
Yeah, lots of options
available.
Lots of options. You can cover it.
And then, so then what'll happen is, so you get situated in your room, and then you come down, our chef will have appetizers ready. And with all of our trips, we have free beer and wine. So as soon as we get back from fishing, you know, you can have a cold one and enjoy just kind of getting to know everybody and talking about the day on the water. And then in Stillwater season, like usually we don't, it's not like a really early morning thing for us either in May, because the water's got to warm up a bit usually. So usually like an 8 a.m. breakfast, and then we head out to the lake.
Perfect. Love that.
That's what we love about lake fishing. We don't
exactly.
There's many great benefits to stillwater fishing. Curtis has touched on big, but we don't have to do dark 30.
It's not a diehard time of year, you know. And you get out there and you wait till you start. You know, you'll probably start off with a leech or something, and wait till you start to see chronomids start popping, and then it's game on. And then that's where Phil comes in and getting everybody sorted on what the heck's going on and how to capitalize on that. So it'll be fun. Yeah. And it'll, you know, I look forward to learning from Phil too. And from it's a good time of year, you know, like in our area, the locals love May because it's prime time for chironomids. And
yeah, there's some guys that once the chironomids are, you know, starting to wane a bit later in June, they'll just stop fishing. They love their chironomid fishing or go find them somewhere else. So
Like honestly, as soon as we're starting to dry fly fish, the guys that were at the lake chironomid, they're gone. They go to the bigger water and keep chasing chironomids, and we throw Chernobyls. But but you know, it's you never know. And in May, you know, you could be out there and you could think you're going chironomid fishing, and you could end up learning how to fish a booby or blob fishing. You could get a boatman hatch. You know, there are
Calabatus mayflies as well.
Yeah. You never know what could happen. So you could go out there thinking you're going to be chironomiding, and could be 25 degrees and caddis might start coming. You never know. Yeah. And you will know on these lakes because the water will start exploding and you'll know, okay, what's going on? I got to figure that. Usually you don't really have to figure it out. You're going to catch them.
It's obvious. right on.
It's fun.
It sounds good. So what, and the lakes, talk about that a little bit. How many, is there one lake? Are there a bunch of lakes we're going to be fishing? Are they big, small? What's that look like?
Yeah. So Phil and I are going to be up there a few days before, and we're going to go do some scouting and just kind of see, you know, where the hatches are most prolific, I guess. So
it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, we're going to have to go fishing, and it's going to really suck. But we're going to do that for these guys. And so we'll check out a few of our favorites and see, you know, where we want to concentrate our time to start. And then, so we have a variety of, we have lakes that have wild fish, and then we have lakes that have stocked fish. So we'll probably go to a wild fish lake for a day or two, and then we'll fish the stocked fish lakes for the other days. And it will probably build up to the biggest fish for the last day once everybody's ready for them, or the last 2 days. We'll just kind of see how things are going. But we have so many lakes. You go where the fishing's good, and we'll make sure we have a pretty good idea where that's going to be.
You've even got some lakes with lake trout in them too, don't you?
We do, yeah. And that's probably in May, they'll be frozen still.
Yeah, they probably because they're a little higher, but they're
last
pretty
year we were
I've
fishing,
got those on the fly. They're pretty aggressive fish.
Last year we were fishing, so we actually had really high water like everywhere out west last year. Mm-hmm. So we lost one of our main rivers for the first week in July because it was unsafe. So I went out with one of our guides, and I had kind of a hunch about a lake, a high mountain lake that I thought, you know, there's lake trout in it, but there's no salmon go into this lake. I don't know what they eat, but I know they're there. So we had gone out there in June before, and it was kind of We caught some fish, but it wasn't like light, so it wasn't good enough. But I had a feeling that this lake had a lot more to offer than what we were seeing. So, and the temperature was really cold in June, still like mid 40s. So we went out there in July because, you know, we had lost this river and we needed somewhere to go. And we were scouting, and I was trolling two boobies. Don't judge me. And I was talking to one of the other guides, and I wasn't, I don't know what I was doing. I wasn't paying attention. And I got blown in really shallow. Like I looked down and my flippers were, I was in a outcast pontoon boat, and my flippers, I was kicking up the marl on the bottom of this lake. And I was like, oh crap, I'm gonna snag up even a booby. How do you do that? And all of a sudden my rods got tight. And I was like, what the heck's, I'm snagged. And I had two lake trout on two rods. So that was fun.
Wow.
So then the other two guides that were out there with me scouting, they came in, they had John boats, and they cruised in there and they look in and they're like, oh, you can see the lake trout. So we're watching these lake trout cruising around and they're eating crani. I did a throat sample and they're just chock full of cronies. And it was under, we caught, I think, 48 lake trout that day, tournaments and boobies.
Wow. And are these all size-wise, the whole spectrum, small to large?
Yeah, I would say 18 to 25 inches. 25 inches was the biggest. I know that they're in there up to 30. I didn't see any that day, but you can see them because they're swimming around. But it's a pretty high mountain lake, and they live for lake trout. There's not even zooplankton in this lake, so they literally live on invertebrates, which is really unique and a lot of fun.
Yeah, and most of the lakers I've chased on the fly are typically up in northern parts of Canada, where the small ones, well, even the larger ones will get on chironomids. I remember one place I was at, we took a fish for shore lunch, and we're just examining its stomach contents, and this thing was packed from mouth to the other end with nothing but chironomid pupa, nothing but. And everybody associates them with eating, you know, they're piscivorous, they eat other fish, and they certainly are. But at certain times, they'll eat chironomids just as readily as a horsefly rainbow or a blackwater rainbow. So they're aggressive. They're every bit as aggressive as a northern pike, you know.
Wow.
They're nasty. They have a bit of a, you know, a temperament issue.
I always joke about it. I'm like, you know, you can just take someone to that lake and tell them they're bull trout. They would never know because they look so.
All right.
Yeah, they're all char.
Oh,
They're
they
all
are.
char.
They're like as close a relative to bull trout as you're gonna. Well, I guess not a dolly, but you know, they look pretty similar, and they're a neat fish, and probably very underappreciated in the fly fishing world too.
Yeah, they are. Why is that? Because they're just not spread out throughout the whole North America or as much?
I think so. And also, you know, having personal experience chasing them is, you know, they go deep. You know, when the waters, they're like any char. They like cool, well oxygenated water. So if it starts to warm up, they go out into deep water. And often, you know, many fly fishers consider them beyond range, but I've been able to figure out ways to get them 70, 80 feet down on the right days, the right conditions. And they like to follow, especially the big ones. So it's tough on a cast and retrieve fly to get the length of retrieve you need. That's why, you know, these big destination lodges in northern Canada, they troll a lot for them, and you'll troll a long way. And the belief is that those lakers will follow that lure or fly for quite a way before committing. And you just don't get the, you know, with a cast and retrieve fly, you don't get the opportunity. But, you know, maybe you don't, you know, I think my personal best is around 20 pounds, which was a handful. So
Wow. That's
I was happy with that.
Damn.
On Quinnell Lake, you'd be hard pressed to catch a laker on a, I mean, you would probably get one, you know, in the fall, maybe at a creek.
That's when I got mine. I got one about 13 pounds at the mouth of Blue Lead Creek. You probably know that spot on Quinnell Lake. And yeah, it was just, there was you could see the bull trout sitting right as the river tailed out into the lake, just sitting there. And we couldn't get him to eat anything small, but I flopped this giant bunny leech out there, and that got their attention. That was worth moving for. And then this dark shape which I thought, as Curtis alluded to, was similar in shape and size to a bull trout, came up and ate it, and it was a lake trout, so it was a pleasant surprise. Yep. But yeah, a lot of times they're just deep and out of range, but that doesn't mean you can't figure out ways to get them. That's the challenge of it all, telling us we can't do something on the fly. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I guess it's a labor of love in most instances to catch a lake trout on a fly rod. On this particular lake, we were catching them, like, we're chronometer fishing with, like, 3 feet on, like, 3 foot indicators, which is your dream, because you see them
right there.
And it's like bobber down, but you didn't even really need the bobber except to hold the, sorry, I shouldn't call it a bobber, a Phil Rolly indicator.
It's a bobber.
Yeah, it's a bobber. No, bobber's good.
You know, the difference between a bobber and a strike indicator? It's about $4.99. So
That's right.
So it was that's unique good. Just since how shallow they were. And this lake, like, when it drops off to, like, I think it was 180 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Electronics are a big help because they will suspend. Out over, you know, that's that time I got them down. We were over 300 feet of water, which was impractical, obviously very impractical to anchor, but we had light winds. So that allowed us the time to get our lines down and our flies down. And, we could see them anywhere from 50 to 70 feet down. So we would just cast the fastest sinking lines we had, allow them to, you know, make a comfortable cast and then stack mend the balance of our line. So it'll just free fall through the water and just let it go down until it hangs almost vertical. Or if you're drifting slowly, it doesn't get sort of past your side, because after that, now you're pulling the line from behind and it's going to swing up. And then just 1 to 2 foot pulls with us, clousers and white streamers and stuff. And boy, when they hit it, you know it.
Nice. And the stack mend, what's that, Phil?
What I've done is I've cast out, you know, what I comfortably can, and I peeled all my line off to the backing. So now I have this reserve of a line, and I basically do a series of roll casts, stacking the line in loose coils on top of where it landed. So it just, it has slack to free fall down. Right. And that's how we figured out how to do it. Right? And you'd be surprised, you know, it has to be a light wind day. But we've also done it like you would fish trout in Curtis's small lakes. You sit on the edge of a drop off. Because they cruise along there, and that's a natural game trail. So very much, you know, the tactics you use that we'll learn in the school for rainbow trout work very well for other species of trout and bass and everything else you can think of that swims in a lake. They're all, they have their little quirks, but they all have the same basic needs and habits. So which, as a fly fisher, we can definitely take advantage of them.
Perfect. So basically what people are going to be coming away if they come to this Stillwater School at Northern Lights is they're going to be able to take what they learn here and use it and apply it to any lake probably in North America.
Yeah, that's the whole idea, is to give them a system, if you will, of what to do when you get to a lake, what to look for, what the bugs are, how to find those insects and bugs and where to look, what flies, you know, to use, what techniques to imitate them, you know, using floating lines and bobbers slow sinking lines, fast sinking lines. There's lots of different techniques you can use to achieve a similar or the same result, depending on the conditions. And you can just go apply that to any body of water. The system I use is the system I use personally that I have used in fly fishing competitions in Eastern Canada, United States, and down in the States, and in Western Canada, and even in, down into Argentina now. And it works. Mm-hmm. So it's worked for me. So there's no, if it can work for me, it can work for anybody. So
yeah. And are the bugs similar? Is the chronomid the same? Are they everywhere around North America?
Yeah, they're all similar. You know, their sizes may vary and species coloration may vary, but you know, I use the same flies in Curtis's Laws that I use in my home in Alberta, that I use in Montana, that I've used in California. They all work. They all work.
Yeah. Perfect. And one thing that we, I know you've talked a little bit about is the boats. Let's dig into that a little bit, Curtis, and paint that, because it sounds like we're going to be fishing kind of smaller lakes. Is that pretty much true?
Yeah. So
yeah,
we run our program almost exclusively with, inflatable pontoon boats, and the reason we do that is we try not to go to lakes where you can take a trailer, because if you can take a trailer, that means it has good access. So we'll load the pontoons in the back of a pickup and crawl our way into these lakes, and And it's just a good way to give, you know, because the one thing is like when I'm guiding on a river and I've got two anglers in the boat with me, it's fun in a different way because you have this kind of camaraderie of like visiting among, but sometimes it's not fun because you might not like the guy in the back of the boat or someone hogs water or whatever.
Yeah.
So the Stillwater thing, the thing that I think people who enjoy it enjoy the most is that you're going to be guided and you're going to be shown, you know, Phil or I or whoever is guiding out there is going to be, you know, they're giving you the knowledge you need to do it. But then no one's breathing down your neck, per se, as you're doing it. So you get, you know, I'll be out on a lake and in my pontoon and a moose will walk out on the shore or a bear or whatever. And you get a solitude. You know, you're still around. Like when someone catches a fish, you're like, oh, cool. Good job, Phil. You know, but it's a different experience because you come out there as a group and then you kind of split off. And you know,
right. You're in your zone. You're in your own little zone.
Yeah, and I find like it's just the best way to experience the wilderness side of it, as well as, you know, if you want to go to shore and go to the bathroom or eat your sandwich or, you know, go try some local mushrooms, whatever you want to do, you know, you kind of are able to do that. And I think people appreciate it, and it allows us to go to places that are just super cool where you control a Chernobyl and catch a big fish. And I think it all comes down, when you're looking for good fishing, the less pressure to fishery you're fishing, the more fun you're going to have most times.
Yeah
you're going to get a learning and wilderness experience all rolled into one, which is pretty unique.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what we're selling. We're not but we're not shy about it. We're in a really cool area, and we're there to keep you safe, and it's fun. But you know, like I'll be out on a river with a guy, you know, and they'll be from Colorado or something, and they'll be looking at me and they're like, "Where are the other boats?" And I'm like, "There's no other boats, man. It's just you and me today." And like, "No, that's no, no, cool. Got to be other boats." I'm like, "No, there's no other boats. This is us. This is what we do. It's rugged country, it's tough country, and it's super fun to share it with people because it's hard to find that now. And we work pretty hard to keep looking for it and to preserve it because it's going away."
Right. No, I mean, it sounds like this is kind of Alaska, right? This is similar to the Alaska experience. The latitude's probably very similar. Like, but I know that, a lot of people, right?
But a lot cheaper.
Yeah. But cheaper. That's right. Because, I mean, Alaska is, we always find it when we do surveys and talk to our listeners, you know, I mean, Alaska is like the number one place.
Yeah. The last frontier,
Yeah, it's like the last, people are always like Alaska. But literally, I haven't even looked at it on a map, but I think you guys are pretty much like right across, right? If you headed west.
No, we're south. We're south.
Oh, a little bit.
We're like, so where we're situated is kind of weird. Like, you would think we're way more remote than we actually are. But the pavement ends at the lodge in a very small community. There's no cell phone service within an hour. And the rivers, it's like, I come from Alberta where I can go just about to any river in Alberta, pick a spot on a map, get to the river, and I can usually walk 7 or 8 kilometers either direction. Wherever I want to go, access is usually not hard. Where we are, it's gold rush country. They're fast, really fast moving rivers, and they're all brushed in. So if you don't know where to go and you don't like bears, not a good place to go. So anyway, and the lakes are kind of the same thing, you know, like I'll go into a lake where I know if I break down or get stuck, the lodge knows where I am. We're going to get out of there. If I was just out there by myself, I wouldn't do it because I do blow tires, and I do, you know, things do happen out there because it's tough country, and it just keeps it special because it is tough. And it's fisheries be like, "Oh, do you want us to work on that road?" No, don't. We want you to make it worse.
So, yeah.
We should probably point out, though, you know, Curtis has mentioned bears a few times. You're not going to step out of your vehicle and 13 of them are going to jump.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty special to see one. And they want nothing to do with you.
When we get out of the trucks, you know, there's a few guys in the trucks and we're loud and they don't like people. Once you're out on the lake, if you're quiet, you know, I always tell people, like, if you want to see a moose or a bear, if you don't holler when you catch a fish, you're going to see more.
If you're
having a grand old time and you're hollering across the lake at Bobby because he just caught a fish and you're happy for him, you're probably not going to see anything that day. There was one time, though, where I was these guys from California came up and I took them into this wilderness lake. And we get out of the truck and they're looking around. They're like, are there bears here? And I was looking at them and I was like, you are standing in bear crap right now. Like, literally the biggest pile of black bear crap I ever saw. He's standing in there.
Right.
Yeah. But don't worry, you know, we know what we're doing. And you know, you just, if a bear comes out on a lake, that's cool. Like, you give them space. You don't go try to get your, don't go for a selfie. You know, you can row. That's
common
sense. We have oars on our boats. You will always out row a bear. They can't swim that fast, and they don't want
they can't
to do with you.
That's cool. And these are black bears. I wasn't thinking about that either. I was thinking grizzlies, but yeah, these are black bears.
Oh no, we have both. Usually, like in the spring, we'll see the blacks more. I was in October a few years ago. I was going out to a stillwater because the guys that were coming wanted to do some stillwater fishing. So I took the boats into this lake the day before and it had snowed. So I wanted to make sure I could actually get to the lake. It was a little diehard to even go there, but I expected the snow to melt. So I drove in and I had my tire chains on. It was pretty Western. Get out of the truck. It's close as I can get to this lake. And I start dragging these pontoons in and I get to the edge of the lake and I'm looking around and I'm like, who in the world is snowshoeing in like 4 inches of snow? This is ridiculous. It was moose hunting season. So I thought there was a moose hunter out there snowshoeing because it's what it looked like. So I keep dragging my boat in and there's a canoe in this spot turned over. So I knew someone had been there. And as I get up to these tracks, like, oh, those are not snow. It was a grizzly track and it was... It looked like a snowshoe track from a distance.
Wow.
It was like it had snowed quite a bit and it was all in the trees and it was starting to warm up. So the snow was falling out of the trees everywhere. So like if this bear had to have just been there.
Oh, right.
And
wow.
And I was alone. And usually like the one thing you don't want to do if you're in bear country, going by yourself is the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
And I didn't bring my gun because I was like, you know, I want to be tough, like skied someday. So,
right.
Like two of our guides or one of our guides have been mauled by bears like more than twice. So not guiding fishermen. He was a hunting guide before. But so, you know, I'm trying to catch up a little bit because I can't compete with his stories at the dinner table. And but in this instance, I was like, oh, boy, I think I'm going to go back to the truck.
Yeah. So they're pretty, yeah, well, I think it's cool. I mean, for me, I've never, you know, I think bears are cool. I think like, right, yeah, your chances of getting attacked by a bear are like, you know, one in a million. It's just like getting struck by lightning.
Or eaten by a shark, you know.
Yeah, but
or a cougar.
If you're in bear country and you're by yourself and it's like,
right.
You
got a better chance.
Grizzly's about to
a little better chance.
He was moose hunting because he could have been down eating rotten salmon, but he was not.
He was going for the big stuff.
So this is a predator bear on this lake, especially. And I did feel a little bit like I maybe should have not left my gun in the truck and I should probably. So then I got back to the truck and I was like, well, if I go back to the lodge with boats in my truck still, Skeed's going to think I'm a wimp. So yeah. I still dragged the boats out, but it was the longest walk of my life.
With more than 40 years of experience in coffee, the Angler's Coffee Team roasts a full range of coffees with one goal in mind, delivering excellent coffee to every single angler. Responsibly sourced from farms using sustainable growing practices, you can rest easy knowing you are doing your part. Roasted and shipped within 48 hours to assure freshness. For me, it's all about that freshness and taste. When I crack open a bag of Anglers in the morning, I feel good because I know it not only tastes amazing, but I'm supporting great movements along the way. With a coffee blend for every taste, a dry dropper on the go tea bag option, and a roast sampler, you know Joe at Anglers is serving your needs. It's time to step up to better coffee and more impact for the fish species and causes that we love. Just visit wetflyswing.com/anglers to grab your bag of greatness today. That's wetflyswing.com/anglers, A-N-G-L-E-R-S, to make a change and get a sweet taste today.
Well, I want to touch on Skeet if we have a chance, because that guy is like, they don't make him like Skeet anymore, right? He's this old time, you know, his style. But I want to go back to the school too, because I want to paint the picture of what we're going to be getting into. So let's take it, maybe both of you guys, so we can talk, okay, like days, when are people going to be flying in? What day? What's the first morning going to look like? Let's talk about that a little bit. First, maybe Chris, tell us, is there like time-wise, are we coming in on like a Friday, a middle of the week? What's that look like?
That's a good question. I believe...
Or does it matter? I mean, if it doesn't matter, I didn't know. Maybe just talk about your typical program.
I don't know the exact date. If it's usually it's a Sunday when our trips start. So
yeah,
people will fly in on the Sunday. And then so we'll pick them up at the airport Sunday afternoon, come get settled at the lodge. You know, there's a dock. You can fish in Quinnell Lake right off the front of the lodge if you'd like to. That time of year, actually, if there is a time to do it, that's a good time, because the fry are all up on the shoals and the lake trout are usually shallow. Close her out.
So they can fish right away. So somebody rolling in Sunday.
Yeah, you can work on your casting. Like it drops off pretty quick. So it's not the greatest place to fish. And we don't put the pontoon boats in there, because if the wind picks up, you're gone.
You're done.
Quinnell Lake is a massive, massive body of water.
It is.
Yeah.
Big.
So it's the deepest freshwater lake, or deepest freshwater fjord lake, I believe, in North America.
Oh, wow.
Or even the world, I think. I at least North America. It's like 1,500 foot deep in spots. So I was joking. That's a floating line and a really long leader. So
yeah. So I mean, in front of the lodge, it's about 100. I think I was out there in the winter one time in my pontoon, and I would do what Phil was talking about. I'd go out there in my pontoon and I'd have my fish finder, and I'd watch for a lake trout on the bottom, and then I'd drop down and until I couldn't feel my legs anymore. Then I'd come back in, because it was like February, but. It drops down like from our dock out. It's like it goes from like it's just straight down. Like you can't.
Yeah, it's deep. Gotcha. Yeah.
But there's a bit of a shoal there, and the trout do cruise it. You see them all the time. So yeah, if you want to work on your casting that day, just kind of brush up, get your gear all ready for the next day. Usually on our still waters, I recommend a 5 or 6 weight rod, floating line, and if you have sinking lines, you know, like a few spools, if you can bring like a medium sink and a fast sink, you know, that's good to have. Gives you more versatility. Usually and Phil is probably more the expert on this, but usually I'll run a floating line with an indicator, and then if there's a possibility of dry fly fishing, I always have a dry fly rod, but that's just personal preference. A lot of guys will run like a heavy sink with a booby or something and a leech, and then when the chironomids start popping, you kind of transition over to you know, you get a throat sample off an attractor pattern, and then you have that equipment ready to switch your rig over and get in position.
Yeah, usually with the schools, they arrive in the afternoon, get settled in, and then after dinner, that's when it sort of kicks off. We'll do a bit of an orientation session with them. Go over what to expect for the week, the schedules, all that kind of stuff, what we're planning on doing, so they have an idea of what's ahead of them. And then, Curtis alluded to earlier, we don't have to be on the water at the crack of dawn, so that allows us to, you know, get a seminar in the morning after breakfast when everybody's still wide awake, and then we head off to the lake where the real learning takes place and practice what. You know, the concept, you know, each session is tailored to the situation we expect for that day or for the week. And then, you know, we come back in the evening, have dinner, debrief a little bit, relax. You know, that gives us the ability, if the fishing's really stupid good, we can extend the day a little bit, depending on, you know, the lodge, what the chef says. That usually guides us, right? To Curtis, what they're going to allow us to do. We don't spoil dinner.
Yeah, I'm married to one of them, so I have to be a little careful.
Well, okay, then then we have license, because we can just blame Curtis. But
yeah, I'm the only one who would get in really big trouble.
That's kind of the process. And with the you know, people being in pontoons, we have the portability. They're very safe and stable. Like you'd, it would take them. It's,
you know, these boats, right? They're outcast boats.
Yeah, I think, they're the best. They are the best. Yeah. They're super, super stable. You know, the only way you'd have to be pulled out of it, like to, like they're super stable, very comfortable. Yeah. You know, it's probably conceivable we might catch a student falling asleep. It's a bit like
fishing. Exactly.
It's a bit like fishing in a Lazy Boy, right? You got cup holders and everything. You lean back, you're comfy. You're just moving around or letting the wind move you. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, wake up. So
that's right.
Yeah.
How do you do that when you, with your rod, let's say, so we're on the lake. So with multiple rods, is that easy to put where, how, is there a limit to how many rods you'd have on a boat like this?
Yeah. So we have Scotty rod holders on the boats. So, so usually you'll have one rod in the rod holder, you'll be holding the other one. And so it's not bad. There's a bit of, like, if you've never been in a pontoon before, there is a learning curve.
Yeah.
So probably day one, you know, we'll, that's probably the day where we'll go to the wild.
Yeah, I would do a session on that. Kind of a confidence thing,
because it does, once, and when you start, like, it was funny when I started guiding for Skeet, I'd actually never been in a pontoon. So the day before, I had to go out and learn how to flipper, which was... And when I left the lake, I only went out for 2 hours. And when I left the lake, I was like, I'm going to look like an idiot. And then the next day, it's like your brain just does it.
Yeah. Usually if you can walk, you can kick.
Yeah.
It's one leg at a time.
It's like riding a bike. As soon as you quit thinking about it, it's easy. But
yeah.
But it's just muscle memory.
Yeah. If you've ever been on a rowing machine, you'll be fine. Like it's these things, they draw so little water, they scoot. Like if you need to go, that you can go. Right. You know, it's, and you can even buy, you know, Outcast makes a little float tube called the Cruiser that has oars on it. And I got one last year, and that's a pretty nice addition to a float tube, which is usually kick, 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 and all that stuff. Now you can just sort of tuck your legs up a little bit and just scoot with those little oars and you go like mad. So,
yeah, with ours, like ours are all like you're only in the water to your shins when your feet are down. And then when you're like, the reason we like the pontoons, truthfully, over because most people in the Caribou region will fish out of like a marlin or a flat bottom, and they're super cool boats. But when you're dry fly fishing, mobility is everything. And so I always tell guests, you know, like if we're out and you hear a rise or see a rise within casting range, you have about 5 seconds. If you can hit that ring, you're going to catch that fish, but you got to be able to do a 180. And with your flippers, you can do that. And not only that, but you can, like, my favorite way to fish the lakes is like when the dry fly stuff is on, or even if I'm booby fishing, I will just cruise the edge of the shoals. And I'm hunting fish. I'm watching for fish. And I'm, if all of a sudden it just gives you mobility and the ability to make a cast in a hurry, which results in a lot more fish with the style of fishing that we're doing. You know, and then it'll transition, you know, cause we're going to be chronomid fishing. So we'll be anchoring up too, which is something that in June we don't do a lot of unless the wind picks up or something, but with chronomid fishing, you'll be anchoring up and we'll be setting a depth and kind of hunting certain water at certain times. But
the other nice thing about those pontoon boats is sitting up, not only your shins, but you also have a higher perspective. So you can, if you're indicator fishing, you have a better chance of seeing the takes. Sometimes with a float tube, you're almost on the same level as your line and indicator. And if you're in a bit of a chop, you can miss takes because it's always, you know, when your indicator's in the trough, and pops back, and then you expect it to rise up and it's gone, you're too late, you've missed it. So the pontoon boats allow you to do that, and
you can't go shallow in a float tube either.
No, yeah, with a pontoon boat you can, you know, tuck your feet up onto the pegs and use the oars and scoot right in to 6 inches of water if you had to get whatever the casting angle you need that fish.
And I do that, like when the caddis come off. When the caddis are coming off and you get in, right? Like Skeed, when he comes out to the lake, I know exactly where he's going to go on the one lake every time. And he'll go in there because he's 75 and He's smart. He's been out there a few times, so he knows where he wants to be, and he's patient. He's like, I know it's gonna happen, and he'll sit right by these reeds, and he'll capitalize on the caddis, but then he'll also capitalize on, you'll see the rainbows go into the reeds, and they'll start bumping them to knock the damsel nymphs off, and he'll cast his dry fly in there. And with him, it's either a olive tri-wing sedge or a red tom thumb, and he just sits there. He knows it's coming, and he'll wait. And when it picks up, you'll see he's got his rod. He never fishes two rods. He's just hunting fish.
I think it was originally designed as a caddis imitation. When it's a fly that, despite it's made out of deer hair, it can be a little tricky to tie to get everything secured on the hook tight and use the right amount of deer hair. But you can tie it in a range of colors from natural. It'll be a terrestrial. It can be a caddis. It can be a whatever. It's just a mayfly, but it's basically a tail of deer hair, and then it's got a shell back and wing all tied out of the same, the same piece of deer hair, section of deer hair you tie in that folds over, and the wing stands up kind of like a comparadon, all fanned out in the front. And when you first see one of these caddis emerge, they typically the pupa are going to ascend to the surface. They'll sit horizontally, they'll crawl out of that shuck, their bodies in front, and they love to stand their wings up momentarily, vertically, almost to dry them out, and then tuck them along their back, and then off they go for a scoot. And that, I think that tom thumb, the tail suggests the shuck of the pupa, the humped body is the body of the caddis, and that wing standing up proud in front, all fanned out, is like a caddis momentarily, drying its wings before tucking. It's almost like an emerger of sorts. And it's not very durable. It gets destroyed and shredded. And the worse it gets shredded, the more the trout
Very
like it. I fished them with like thread and a few bits of deer hair on it. And that's they wanted it. You tie them sloppy and messy,
Yeah.
it's almost like the fish are like, I'm not eating that. I like to mess
That's
it up.
right.
So
Seems like a lot of caddis flies are like that. The more that you, the mayfly is not the same, right?
yeah, it's more delicate. Yeah, the mayflies probably sit and hold their position a little better. Caddis are on the
Yeah.
move. They love to scoot and run along the surface. And when you're that big,
Yeah.
you make your fly wake, they'll come explode on it, right? That's what they're looking for. That's they just head to the point of the V and the apex of that V, and they know there's a big bite to eat waiting there for them.
Nice. Good stuff. All right,
Yeah.
so we talked about so Monday, Tuesday we're going to be doing the school, and then how many days total will this be at the lodge?
It's 6 nights accommodation, right, Curtis, and 5 full days of fishing. Yep. So they arrive on the Sunday, fish the entire week, take advantage of that opportunity that not too many other people are going to be out on these lakes at all, and then depart on Saturday when the weekend chaos shows up. And
Perfect.
of course, they're welcome to stick around, right, Curtis, and continue their trip around the region or extend their stay at the lodge if they wish.
Absolutely. We get people who come to the lodge 3 times in a season because they'll come for still water, and then they come back for the peak of the summer dry fly fishing on the rivers, and then they want to see the grizzly bears in the fall and fish with the salmon. So it's like it's literally a different place almost every month, except for July and August are kind of pretty. Like if you've ever fished like cutthroat trout on a high mountain stream and the way they come up for dries, it's like that in July and August. It's a lot of fun. And then like we literally do not fish subsurface July and August until maybe the very end of August, when you start to get some Chinook salmon show up, or king salmon as some people might know them, and then the bull trout will start to move in with them. So then we'll go subsurface a little bit for the bull trout, but up until those salmon show up July and August, it's all dry fly for the most part.
Perfect.
And then in September, you can like Skeed, when he goes up to where everyone else is fishing eggs, he'll throw a mouse pattern or a big nasty terrestrial, because you won't catch as many fish, but you'll have a lot more fun doing it with a dry, and that's how he likes to fish. So one thing I will say about May or any time of year really is in the caribou, because we are in the mountains, highly recommend you come with a good base layer, like a fleece or a wool base layer, and then always have a raincoat. If you don't bring your raincoat, it will rain. If you do bring it, probably still will rain. You never But we always joke in the Caribou that if you don't like the weather, just wait 15 minutes, it'll change. And
you'll have all four seasons in an hour.
Yeah, it's so you know, you'll go from a t-shirt to a sweater to a raincoat to a t-shirt sometimes more than once in a day. And yeah, it's a beautiful place. It's a lot of fun. And I look forward to learning from Phil and meeting some people that are gung-ho to learn about Stillwater.
And often with my courses, Dave, you know, a month or so prior to them arriving, we'll have a Zoom call with everybody who signed up, and we can talk about these kind of things as far as gear and flies and logistics of getting there and what to expect and what to bring so they arrive prepared, right? Yeah. They have an opportunity to ask those questions, which is really important because there's nothing worse than a guest showing up unprepared with the wrong rods, you know, dressed for the Bahamas, or you know, vice versa. So make sure they're all and answer any questions and deal with any uncertainties they have. So, you know, the total thing is to serve and meet their needs so they have a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's what you get. I think that's what separates this is that they get access to you for a full week. They're in this amazing remote wilderness area. And then probably even after the trip, right? I'm sure they could ask you questions moving forward. I'm sure probably build friendships.
We're all friends. So, you know, they're going to get pestered for me.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, I've got some of my best friendships are on trips like this that have joined me on other trips, you know, outside of North America. They just, you know, it's just going fishing with friends. It's a lot of fun. It's some of the best ways to make a friendship are over fly fishing.
Exactly. Perfect. Yeah. Well, before we take it out of here, Curtis, maybe just give us a heads up. We've talked about it a little bit, but you guys have this other program, the Stream program, and Skeet talked about this a little bit, but just give us a highlight on that. We're going to be focusing on Stillwater for this trip and this event, but you know, when would be the time and talk about that program a little bit, because this is kind of a once, like you can't find bull trout everywhere, right? This is a pretty unique fishery.
Yeah, so bull trout are typically, like we get some in mid-August, depending on the water flows. That's when our bull trout fishing will start. And then it progresses it keeps going until we close down.
In October?
Yeah, mid-October is kind of the tail end of our, like we shut down mid-October, just because by that time you could have snow in winter. Usually you don't, but you know, no one wants to show up October 16th to a foot of snow. So, you know, we might get snow in September, but it'll last a day. We might get snow in July. Like, you never know. But typically, you know, like, our weather's not that drastic during our season, which runs mid-May to mid-October. And so, May and June are Stillwater. July and August are river dry fly fishing. We get prolific yellow sally hatches, crane fly hatches, golden stone hatches, caddis hatches. It's a really, and we fish them
for bull trout. These are dry bull trout on the dries.
No, mostly rainbows.
Rainbows.
Yeah, okay. No bull trout. The only time, I'll tell you this story in a second. I'll tell it right now. So bull trout, I have caught a few on dry flies, but it's pretty rare in our area. But I was on a river in September once, and I had these two brothers fishing with me, and the one brother, he had caught seven rainbows and eight casts. And his last rainbow on his eighth cast, as he's reeling it in, a bull trout out of nowhere just grabs this rainbow, and he fights it for like a couple minutes, and we thought we were gonna get it. And I'm just about to net, and it was a pretty big bull trout. And I'm just about to get it in the net, and he spits the rainbow, and he swims like 20 feet away from us, right in front. We can see him right by this log. So anyway, this guy looks at me, he's like, I want it. We let the rainbow go. I don't think it was doing very well. He's like, I want to catch that bull trout. And I was like, okay, well, so do I. So this is cool. But I just want you to know, you just caught seven fish and eight casts. You want to change flies. He's like, yeah, okay. So anyway, full disclaimer, we got that out of the way. And then, so I give him this big, you know, bunny leech, juicy bull trout fly. And we're dead drifting it over this fish, twitching it right when we get to his, he will not touch it. So we go down the run, and there's a big hole, and you can see like seven or eight bull trout in this hole that day. So he's hunting these bull trout. Finally, we hook one, and one of our senior guides comes over with a net and kind of steals my guy from me, and I'm kind of bummed out. I'm like, oh, I wanted a bull trout. But anyway, we get this bull trout in the net. He's happy, and his brother is now upstream fishing where we had just had 7 fish and 8 casts. He moved in on that spot. So I go up there to his brother's super cool guy, Mark, and he's using an airlock indicator, and I give him the egg that we were using to catch these rainbows, and he gets a few rainbows, and then he makes a cast and he gets all tangled up. So I go and I start hand bombing his line in to untangle this egg from this indicator. And I wish I would have had like a GoPro on, because as I'm reaching down to grab this airlock indicator, this bull trout came and took the indicator. Like almost got my hand, and it sounds outrageous, but I had witnesses. Takes this indicator and takes off again. So the same one that had eaten this rainbow now has this airlock, but it had the egg wrapped around. So I thought he hooked him. And it was like, I don't know if you've ever ice fished, but when you're fishing tip ups, you're usually holding like a line and you hook a pike and you can feel it kind of pulling away. I felt like I was ice fishing. Like I'm holding this bull trout, keeping tension, yelling at Mark. I'm like, Mark, get your rod, get your rod. We got him. We got him. Anyway, so he fights this bull trout for another couple minutes, just about in the net, and then he lets go. And the airlock, I should have taken a picture of it, but it had tooth marks in it. They don't really have teeth, but they have like their jaws are almost like a razor, and you could see this chunk like where he had been holding on. It was like imprinted, his tooth marks, like when you go to the dentist and get a mold done.
Yeah,
in this airlock indicator. It was super cool. And it was, I'll never forget that in a million years. Like it was probably one of the coolest things that's happened to me on the river. And I really wish I would have video of it, because it was unreal.
So they're aggressive.
But yeah, so we do get typically September and October are prime for bull trout. And we do a mixture, like it's always bull trout and rainbow trout fishing. And when we see bull trout, we'll target them. And yeah, it's super diverse. And also in the fall, you know, for people who are interested in stillwater, you know, September is a really good time to get back on the stillwater too. So you can do a combo of, you know, lake fishing and or stillwater fishing and river fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was saying, that video on our website with the Chernobyl getting stripped with the drone shot there, that was, I think, third week of September when the boatmen were coming off.
Gotcha.
So
perfect. Well, that kind of paints a picture of, you know, the full thing. And I guess we'll take it back. Phil, anything before we head out of here you want to give a shout out? I mean, we just kind of touched the surface on some of this stuff. We'll have links to past episodes we've done. But
I think we covered it. We don't want to give away too much. Right. We want to come and join us. We want to whet their appetite. No, it's going to be you know, we're recording this. It's March, early March, and I'm already pinging the walls, looking forward to this because it's just going to be such a cool experience.
Yeah, it's right around the corner, so this is going to be good. Cool. Well, I'll leave it there. I guess I'll just ask you guys so we can get some a little bit of music. Curtis, I haven't heard from you. This is our random questions heading out of here. I know what Phil listens to, but Curtis, what do you, when you're on the water, when you're in the truck heading up to the river or the lake or heading out, what's your music? What's your type or group or all that stuff?
You know, I'm so strange when it comes to, so I used to play in punk bands and rock bands, and then I kind of turned into like folk bands, and so I'm all over. And then I got into country. So lately I've been listening to a lot of the Dead South, which is kind of I think they're from Saskatchewan, kind of a bluegrass style band.
Uh-huh. That sounds awesome.
I have to look those
up. But then I'm also like into the older, punk rock and, you know, bands like the Lawrence Arms and Rise Against, and I don't know. I'm all over. In the truck, when I have fly fishing guests with me, it's not usually the punk rock that's requested. So
Right. So. The Dead South, though, that sounds like that's a good mix, the Dead South.
Yeah, they're really good. I really, really like their music. I don't know. I'm... I, I like anything but rap.
Yeah. Yeah, no rap. And remind us again, Phil, what do you listen to? Are you
know, you've listened to my I like a lot of classic rock. And,
yeah.
You and I were at another lodge and
yeah.
We were able to get some
yeah, that was a good night.
Apple Music going. We were having a good time reminiscing.
That was a good night.
You know, the reason I love that music is it takes you back to when I was growing up and when I was younger and puts you in a place and a time or in a situation that's very memorable. So yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although I'm like Curtis, so I'm a bit all over the place. Sometimes my two sons listen and they're either mortified I would listen to that or blown away I'm actually listening to something they like. So I just like to keep off guard. It's part of being a good parent.
Exactly. Yeah. I had my kids, we were out last night and my two girls, they're 8 and 10. Zeppelin came on in the background at the restaurant. I was like, so, all right, everybody, who is it? You know, come on. Nobody had it yet. I was kind of disappointed because I was a big Zeppelin fan, or I still am.
Well, it's funny. I had a similar story. My oldest son, you know, when his teens came up to me and said, this is a great song, Dad. When did it come out? And it's like the Stones, Fade to Black. And I went, 1965, I think. He's like, oh, my. He was mortified that, you know, he would like something, you know, that was back in the dinosaur time, according to him, right?
Exactly. That's good stuff. Timeless. So, timeless. Yeah, cool. Timeless.
Actually, you know, one of the guys you probably had on the podcast is one of my, Chuck Reagan. Have you ever had him on?
Oh, you know what? I haven't, but I've heard that name quite a bit.
Yeah, he's Hot Water Music, and then he has his own solo music, but it's awesome. He's one of my favorites, too. And he's, I think he's a guide in California. Anyway, I don't know him, but super good music. Perfect. His solo album is awesome. If you like, you know, acoustic style music.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We'll throw some links in the show notes so people can listen on the way out of here. We'll throw some links to some Spotify stuff and people can have a listen to some of our music here. But cool, guys. Well, this is exciting this week. So we'll be throwing in some links for anybody who wants a chance to win this trip. We're going to be giving away a trip, a slot up here to this thing to promote this big event. So until we see you guys on the water, thanks for your time today, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here again.
Yeah, thank you.
So there it is, wetflyswing.com/425. Head over to 425 right now, wetflyswing.com/425, and you can enter to win that big trip giveaway. It's going on for the next week, and this is your chance to head up to the Stillwater School. This is Stillwater Week. We're going to be heading up there with Phil Roy, wetflyswing.com/giveaway, and we're going to have Phil. He's going to be teaching the school. You're going to get an all-expenses-paid trip to the Northern Lights Lodge, everything we talked about today, a week trip. It's going to be the big thing, and you're going to get a big prize pack of all sorts of gear to take with you on your trip. Food, beverages, this one's dialed. Once in a lifetime, Stillwater trip, the Stillwater School, link in the show notes. Quick listener shout out before we get out of here, Ben Franken. Ben noted the Brian Horsley episode that we had on, and he was pretty stoked because he was talking about listening to that episode, and he thought Brian was a lot younger, and when it turned out he was 68, Ben was pretty surprised. He let us know that he really enjoyed that episode. I want to give Ben a shout out here and say thanks for checking in by email. And we're going to put together an episode for you, Ben, as we move forward. Just check in with me anytime and I will do my best. But I hope you appreciate this shout out. And it looks like also you can also give Ben a shout out on Instagram, FrankenBen1. That's FrankenBen1. Reach out, and if you're listening now, tell Ben that you heard him on this podcast, and we give him a big shout out today. Okay, that's it. We are heading this week. Stay tuned on Thursday. We're going to be right back here. Phil Roy is going to be back on the podcast to do a solo episode about breaking down a brand new lake step by step. So if you're interested, if you're new to Stillwater, or even if you're not, if you want to get some tips from Phil heading to a new lake, Phil's got you covered. He's going to break it down step by step this Thursday to get you ready to go. All part of Stillwater Week. This is big. The Littoral Zone Podcast. Phil is doing it every month. The Littoral Zone Podcast, breaking out the good stuff for Stillwater Week. All right, I'm going to get out of here. I hope you have a chance to connect with me. If you don't win this trip, I hope you have a chance to say hi. If you haven't connected with me, just send me an email, dave@wetflyswing.com anytime. And I can tell you right now, it is late in the evening, late. So I hope you are having a good evening, a good morning, or a good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. And I appreciate you for supporting this podcast and for checking in.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.